Okay. Requirements for chairing a meeting at Central Orlando Group Saturday night speakers meeting is 1 year of continuous sobriety and have Central as your home group and attend a group conscience meeting. My name is Jennifer and I'm an alcoholic. Central is my home group. I am getting close to my 4 year mark by the, you know, God willing, one day at a time. And I was here earlier today chairing the nude meeting, and it is so cool to see so many people who were there that are here tonight too. What can I say? I drank like a pig, right? That's what I said earlier. And today I've just been rushing around and it's all good. I mean, I love reading A Vision for You because there is a solution for me when I choose to use it. And I learned all this through walking in the doors desperate and through working the steps with a sponsor. So I'm incredibly grateful to be chairing this meeting with you all tonight. So that's it. Thanks. The group asked me to remind you to please make sure your phones are off and to refrain from moving around or talking while our cute little speaker is sharing. I'm going to introduce our speaker tonight. Most of you have seen her around. She has this infectious smile. She's always smiley. And, you know, I've heard her share many times with the new meetings. And it was just one of those things where I was like, I want to hear her story. She's always had great little things to say. And I just love to see her around. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Brandy. Yay!
Sorry, I had to take off these shoes because they're like super uncomfortable.
I understand.
All right, and I have a little stepladder here. Woo! All right. Hello, everybody. My name is Brandy, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Brandy.
This is scary up here. Okay. All right. Let's see. Okay, I'll start with my sobriety date. I got sober on September 6th of 2001, and I was 22 years old. Let me rewind a little bit. I was born in Florida, and in Polk County, and and when my mom married my stepdad, we moved to Spain. And we lived off base, and there's really no liquor laws in Spain or anything like that. So I was exposed to alcohol, like, really, really young. Really, really young. Like, I remember the tabletop kind of being here and, like, taking cups off the table. And my parents, they partied a lot, so there was always a lot of drinking going on, and it was sort of the norm for us, military family and all of that. Still so nervous. Sorry, 1 second. I'm just going to pray for a second. Okay. All right. Anyway, so when we lived in Spain, we lived there for about 6 years, and then we moved back to the United States. We moved to Utah. And that's really when, like, I started to feel like I didn't fit in. It really wasn't so much when we lived overseas. It was more when we came back to America. I started to feel like I was on the outside a little bit. And that got progressively worse. and that was a big part of why I drank. I was a latchkey kid. So I would come home. We had several bars in the house. So even in elementary school, I was helping myself to the things that, and experimenting home alone for hours and hours, figuring out what I liked and what I didn't like and what was fun and things like that, all alone. That's another part of my story. I spent a lot of time alone, and that's kind of my go-to fix. That's a big character defect of mine, is to isolate. So that was like elementary school. And then in junior high, like, my friends were curious about drinking. A lot of people in Utah didn't have alcohol in their homes. So when my parents had parties, I'd invite my friends and I would play the bartender. And I had a really good time with that because I'd sneak my friends' drinks and we'd all kind of be laughing and joking and drinking behind the bar. And it pretty much, junior high was still kind of fun. I remember, you know, laughing and falling up steps with my girlfriends and things like that. It was still just, it hadn't really progressed to the, you know, vomiting and blacking out and all that yet. But I would come here every summer for camp in Apopka. And once I became a counselor at that camp, we started on the weekends, like, pooling our money, and we would go to hotel rooms, and we would party, like, all weekend long, and that's when that started happening. I found out that I'm not always a really nice person. Sometimes, you know, when I would get drunk, I would black out, and if I wasn't getting my way about something, I would, like, throw a really big fit, and, you know, and I didn't remember, and people would tell me the next day, well, you did this and that, and I was like, you're kidding, like, that doesn't sound like me at all, and I would just totally blow it off, like, I didn't really think that I did that. And it was, I guess, also in my nature to find someone really big and challenge them. And an example of that, we were on the second story, like outside balcony of a hotel room one of these weekends, and I decided to, this girl, Tiny was her name, I decided to challenge her, and I actually threatened, I guess, to throw her over the balcony because I felt like it was her fault that I wasn't getting my way about something. And I think back and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, how did I not get myself killed or hurt really bad? I don't, you know, that was definitely all God. So that was around 17 that I started to really start to make a mess for myself when I would get drunk. And then I had a best friend. And usually she was the one when we partied together that would get totally intoxicated and I would have to look after her. But one time she decided that it would be a good idea that I have fun that night and really let loose. And so I did. And I remember bits and pieces of that night. I remember like crawling around on the floor and there was like this Yoda cutout on the floor and I remember talking to it and I remember my girlfriend like whispering in my ear, Brandy, you're being an ass. And I remember that and I don't know, I've always been kind of competitive. There was somebody there that was the alcoholic, and I decided that shot for shot, I was going to match this guy and just show him, you know, what I was made of. I remember 9, and I remember what it was. It was the Swedish cherry vodka that night, and it was so disgusting going down, and it was so disgusting coming up. It was like... but I had blacked out by then, fortunately, and I got sick on him, on the couch, and everything, and my friends left me alone. We were both drunk and left us alone to go get some stuff to clean, I guess, the mess up. And the next thing, I kind of had this, like, area where I kind of remember coming back in. I was in a bathtub, and this best friend that I told you about was sitting on the other side of the bathtub, and she said, you know, all right, Brandy, if you think really, really, really hard, you're going to remember this right here. And I was, like, retching into this pot, you know, naked in this bathtub. And I looked up in the doorway, and there was this guy standing in the doorway, and I'm like, oh, my gosh, you know, I'm naked. Get him out of here. And she was like, he put you in this bathtub. And I don't remember any of that. Like, again, grace of God, like, way worse things could have happened. But there's just... I mean, I could go on and on about those war stories, but I'm not going to. But this is just like, that was just the beginning for me, because I also decided that I really wanted to go all out. You know, when I was 19, my parents had enough. You know, I changed houses a couple times. I'd actually moved back down here to Florida to live with my dad for a little. I mean, I couldn't get along with anybody in my family. And ultimately ended up, you know, completely, you know, trying to be self-sufficient at 19, no life skills, the maturity level of, like, I don't know, 5-year-old probably, and just trying to, like, you know, make stuff work the best I could, and also still blacking out and still partying and everything like that. And so I found this, you know, obviously, like, I always find, like, a group of people that were like me. And we would go clubbing, and we would go, and, you know, and this is in Utah, so we would party out in the desert and things like that, and, you know, for days on end. And, you know, we would get dirty, and I would, you know, come to, and my feet would be bloody and bare, and I just never really knew what had happened during those times. But But thank God, like, I really believe I have a higher power, and, like, I choose to call him God, and I feel like he's, like, always really looked out for me. And I don't ever really feel worthy of it completely, of all of the good treatment that I've gotten, but he's definitely always looked out for me. So I guess pretty much from 19 to 22 was just a progression of that. By 22, prison was starting to look pretty good to me. I was pretty tired of the way that I was living. I was choosing to live in a warehouse. I was afraid of my friends. The kinds of things that we were getting into were definitely illegal. And we just didn't really trust each other, but we still kind of stuck together. And there were some pretty scary situations. I was dating a guy at the time when I lived there in the warehouse. It's like his warehouse or whatever. And I remember one night, it seemed like he was dead. Like, we weren't really sure what was going on, but he became very still and very cold, and he, you know, and, you know, people were, like, poking at him and stuff like that, and I thought, oh, well, like, maybe we need to call, like, an ambulance or something. And this is the most honest, like, moment I ever had, and it was very sobering, very briefly sobering. These friends of mine said, if he is dead or if he's dying, we're not going to call the ambulance. We're actually going to throw him on the railroad tracks. So then it occurred to me that that would also happen to me if I were to get myself into that situation. So yet I continued doing what I was doing. I had a few run-ins with the law. I guess I'm blessed with a baby face, because I always managed to scoot out of situations just right as they were coming in, and I would see other people get arrested and things like that. And I remember one situation very vividly. My girlfriend, who was like my roommate at the time, like, we were in a car, and there was a bunch of us, and she got pulled over and she got arrested immediately. And she was no more guilty than any of the rest of us. But she did go to jail that night. And I remember asking for the car keys, you know, to take us somewhere, you know. And the police were like, okay, well, you know, we really have to, like, search and interrogate everyone. And I knew, you know, because I was doing outside issues. I was doing more than doing outside issues. I was actually trafficking outside issues at the time, and I knew that I was guilty, and the chances of me getting out of that situation were pretty slim. They took my entire contents of my purse and had them all over the hood of an SUV, and they got out their paper, and they really took their time, and they they wrote down everything that was in there, and then they handed me my purse back and the car keys, and they told me to drive safe. And I took, you know, those people to somebody's apartment. But I do remember sitting on the curb while they were going through my stuff. And that was really, like, my moment. Like, that was, like, I guess my white light. I didn't really have a white light, but that was my moment where things actually changed for me. I was sitting on the curb, and I was just thinking, like, it started to occur to me that I wasn't really meant for that life. It occurred to me that, you know, I actually have some potential to, like, do some good in the world, that it was being wasted. And for the first time ever, I didn't really want to go to prison or anything like that. And some laws had been passed around that time. We were talking about it later. Even for a first offense for what I was doing was at least 18 months mandatory. So I don't know how I got out of that. That, again, was grace of God. I can't explain it, really. But anyway, I decided that I would try to get some help at that point. Took me, I think, a couple more weeks to get into the rooms. And I came into AA through another program because I thought that was my problem. You know, for a while I went to both programs. And I was told about this meeting that was like kind of out in the middle of nowhere. It was called Peace in the Valley, and it was at Valley Camp in Liberty, Utah. And it was a men's recovery camp. And they would open it up every evening for people from the public to come and have a meeting there. And that's where I feel like I really began to like feel God in my life again there. And I didn't know what I was. I didn't know if I was a this or a that or an anda or whatever. But they were very patient with me, and they didn't, you know, worry about it. They were just like, keep coming back, you know, and here's a book, and, you know, if you want to come to these meetings, you know, you're more than welcome to. And so I did, and I listened, and, you know, at first I thought, well, I probably don't really have anything in common with, you know, the founders or the book, you know, the stuff that's going on in the book, like it was written in the 30s, and, you know, and they're men and they're older than me and things like that. But then when I listened, and it was the same with the people who were at Valley Camp, you know, it was a lot of older men and things like that. So on the outside, like I could have said, well, we're different. I'm too young, or, you know, I'm female or whatever. But when I listened to their desperation and their low bottom, it was the same as mine, you know, we're all the same. So I got a sponsor, and I worked my steps, and about my 90-day mark, my sponsor, she had like 6 years when I asked her to sponsor me, but she relapsed, and her friend told me that she would kind of take over, and I didn't really trust her friend, to be honest with you. Trust was a big thing, because, you know, I needed to be writing a fourth step, and I wanted somebody that I could trust. So I just kept going to Valley Camp, and one day a man approached me at Valley Camp, and he told me, you know, he said, I have the feeling there's not a whole ton of women here. You know, I've always been kind of a tomboy, so I've always, like, you know, hung out with guys and stuff. And I said, yeah, you're right. You know, there really aren't a lot of women that come up here, you know, that I could ask. And he said, well, you're, like, in a dangerous place right now. You need to work your steps. And he told me that he was gay, so, and he was already in a relationship, so he said there's just no reason for us to not work together, and this is a life and death errand, you know, like the book says, so let's get to work. So we got to work, and I trusted him. That was the most important part. I really, really trusted him with everything, and I still remember where we were when, you know, there was like, we had basements in Utah, and we went down in the basement, and there was like all the sewing supplies and like sergers and stuff down there, but it didn't matter. We just pulled two chairs together, and God joined us. You know, anytime we ask God to join us, there's two of us or more, God will be present, you know, and that's when, like, I feel like miracles really start to happen. All right, let me see. So I'll just skip ahead a little here. Oh, so after I worked the steps, I started to find, you know, miracles were really happening in my life. I had been at a job for a decent amount of time. I found a significant other. I bought a home. I married somebody who had kids, so instant family. And then I got pregnant. And you know what I mean? It was like all this was happening really fast. I only had like probably a couple years. I was about 24 years old. And I really wanted to be grown up, like, immediately. And once I got pregnant, I stopped going to meetings because I thought I was all better. And I went into that whole, like, isolation thing, you know, I'm really busy and I have this, that, and the other. And I made a lot of reasons for why I didn't need to be, you know, coming to meetings and being a part of and giving back. And that's the most important thing, is I had some experience, strength, and hope, even though I was young, and even though, you know, I had a couple of years, I still needed to be around people and know who I was and share what I had, and I didn't do that. Instead, I became very dry and very angry, and my marriage ended in violence. And I will never forget the feeling of being in court, like at a courthouse, and seeing someone from the fellowship walk by me and say, what's going on? You know, here I am sober, and I've been arrested for domestic violence in the presence of a minor. And, you know, that was just not a good feeling. So I've definitely have had like some bottoms in sobriety, and but I really do believe, you know, that the struggles that we've been through, you know, they can be our greatest assets for sure. So, and you know, I didn't really see it at the time whenever I was walking through it, but now I can see it, you know, because more people my age are starting to come into the rooms, and more people my age are starting to go through divorce and things like that. And I can actually say, like, I've been there, and, you know, I'm here for you, you know. Anyways, so after the divorce, I decided that I would move back down to Florida. So I moved in with my dad, and I brought my daughter here, and I found a good job. And I decided to move closer to where I worked, and I was really struggling financially at the time a lot, but I'm, you know, if only I could manage well. I just kept at it and kept at it. And, again, went through, you know, a time where I felt like I was too busy, not going to a whole lot of meetings during that time either, wanting to, but just not really knowing how. So I went through another dry period. At that point, and then I met somebody, and I moved in with him and his family, and we became very serious, and he loved my daughter just like I love my daughter, and we talked about, you know, getting married and things like that, and everything seemed really, really perfect. And I guess I got that feeling that I had arrived. And I'll never forget this. One day, I couldn't find my daughter. I couldn't find her anywhere. She wasn't in the places that she was normally. She wasn't in the playroom. And she wasn't in the living room. And we had a really fast road out front of our house, and I kept thinking, I really hope that she didn't, you know, get hit. And so I went through the house, and I just wanted to cross rooms out of my mind. And I went to the master bedroom where my ex-boyfriend's dad and stepmom, you know, that was their room. And I walked in on him molesting my daughter. And and I gotta say that if it wasn't for AA, I probably would have killed him. But I didn't. I looked out for her first, and I got her out of the situation, and I sent her to live with her dad, and she's been with her dad ever since. I thought that I would probably lose my mind. I started smoking again, like a chimney. But I didn't think of drinking, and my sponsor at the time told me that that was the miracle, that drinking wasn't an option to me. And she also told me that I would look back on that time, and I would know that God carried me all through that time. And there was a six-month period there that I was like a zombie. I just got up and did what I needed to do, would go to work, and it was all just, you know, going through the motions, but God carried me for sure. There's no doubt about it. Because I didn't drink and I didn't take my life, you know, and before those were my tools. Those were my tools before. So anyway, and then I moved at the beginning of 2009. I moved to Orlando, and I gotta say, like, I know a lot of people when they get sober in other places that they don't really like wherever they move to, but I've had the opposite experience. Like, I love it here. I've learned so much since I've moved here. And I feel like I've made some really, really awesome friends here. I learned about accountability here, you know, for the first time. I started to learn that, you know, just because I say, like, I'm going to be there, like, I really actually need to, like, be somewhere because people are counting on me. And before I thought, well, I'm not that important. No one will miss me. And I did that for a long time. But I also learned that Bill Wilson taught us that that's sort of the flip side of the ego coin. it's, you know, the opposite of saying, like, I'm the best. Of course someone's going to know I'm there. Like, it's the other side of it, but it's still ego. So that was a defect that I had to pray to have removed and know that people are counting on me when I, you know, to keep my word. That was a gift that I got from, you know, when I moved to Orlando. I love Central. Like, this, I'm so glad that this is my home group. There's some things that kind of remind me a little bit about the place where I got sober. There's certain meetings here, that it just kind of takes me back a little bit. I guess I should also say I have a really amazing sponsor and I have sponsees and I'm like a grand sponsor, I guess. So that's kind of cool. I don't know. I really love the book, and like in A Vision for You, it talks about like what our sober lives are like. And, you know, I used to read The Promises and I used to read A Vision for You. And it was still when I was doing that opposite ego thing. I thought, well, that's great for other people and I see it happening in their lives, but I don't really think it's going to happen for me. But I can tell you today, like I called to wish my dad a happy birthday. And we talked until today. We talked on the phone until the phone died. Mm-hmm. And he actually told me that he was proud of me, and I don't think he's ever said that to me before. So, and that was like the last thing of The Promises. I thought, okay, maybe the other things, but maybe not the family thing. But even the family thing, like, is happening in my life, and I'm like, so grateful. I'm so grateful. I've got to say this too, like since I moved to Orlando, my grandparents have passed away, and I've always, like, I can remember which meetings I went to and shared these things, like when my grandmother was kind of like a mother to me, even though she was far away, like she always sent me letters and stuff. And when she passed away, I went to the Blue Bottoms group and I shared with them, you know, my heartache about it. And you know, just I always bring my stuff here, and you guys love me through it, you know what I mean, and help me to walk through it. And with school, you know, it's been kind of up and down, you know. you know, I'm in the paramedic program, I'm not in the paramedic, it's been very back and forth, but I'm excited, and it's an adventure, and I keep progressing, and right now things are looking really good, and I wasn't sure if I was, you know, more recently I wasn't sure if I was going to get a job. And I ended up, the job that I got was so perfect because I'm actually getting paid to learn what I need to know for school. And it's crazy because, like, I would have paid for that tutoring. And now I have a doctor teaching me, like, what I need to know to do well in school. So I just feel like God put me there, you know what I mean? But anyway, I just want to say, like, I'm humbled, and I appreciate that you asked me to speak, and that's all I really have to say, so thanks.